from Social Studies Strategy. I am Jing Yao, co-hosting this episode with Isaac, who will introduce our guest.
Thanks, Jing Yao, for having me back. Today, we have Assistant Professor Walid Jumblat bin Abdullah from the School of Social Sciences in Nanyang Technological University, whose research focuses on religion and politics with a special focus on Singapore and Malaysia. On his Instagram page, he hosts Teh Tarik with Walid, a series of live chats with prominent socio-political figures about their work and current affairs. In this episode, we ask him about his motivations for starting the series, as well as the prospects of such a format in furthering civic engagement on social media. So, hi everyone. Thanks for joining us today, Walid. Yeah, thanks for coming on to the podcast. So maybe I'll just get started by asking you how you got started with Teh Tarik with Walid. Maybe you can tell us a bit more about the first episode with former Minister Yaacob Ibrahim. How did that get started, and how has the series evolved since then?
Right. Okay. So first of all, thank you for having me. And I always like appearing on podcasts which discuss social issues. You know, I mean, that's the reason why I wanted to do one of my own as well, because I think we severely lack the tools for political and social discourse. And, you know, politics is almost like, it's a dirty word, and it's also understood in a very myopic manner in Singapore. You know, people always want to say, oh, this is not political. Oh, this is not political, when there's no such thing, right? Almost everything is political, or everything is at least tangentially related to politics, right? So my podcast is unapologetically political, right? And I also want to expand the definition of political to mean beyond partisan politics. And that is actually the definition of political. It's just that in Singapore, a lot of us just think of politics as partisan politics. And I would say that's also partly by design. That's not accident, how Singaporeans have thought about it in that way. So I am, you know, I'm probably around the... I'm not around the same age. I'm a bit older than you guys probably. And I'm more of a Facebook person than an Instagram person, right? But during the elections, and I resisted having an Instagram account for the longest time. I've only started in the past couple of years, and I'm still resisting TikTok. I don't know how long I can resist. I'm resisting for now. But during the election, someone invited me. His name is Joel, and he does commentaries on social affairs. I'm sure you guys know him. And it's a pretty good platform he has on Instagram. He invited me to talk about the elections, but just the procedural aspects of Singapore politics. And there were 1,400 live viewers on 1,400 on that Instagram live. And I think that was viewed, I don't know, 15,000 times or something. I can't remember, but I think as of now, it stands at 15,000 or maybe a bit more. And I realized, oh, there is a thirst for this. Of course, I understood also that thirst increases during elections. And after elections, you know, it's more of those who are really interested, then they'll listen. But I thought that this thirst on Instagram, which is a completely different crowd, right, to the Facebook crowd. The younger ones, my students, probably they don't use Facebook. I remember a few years ago, I asked some of my students just casually before class started, hey, why aren't you guys on Facebook? And then one of them said, oh, because our parents are on Facebook. And it got me thinking, oh, that the stuff that I'm saying on Facebook, that is only going to reach one demographic, right? So I needed to expand. And so from Joel's live session, then I thought, oh, okay, there is this market. And I just, one of the few people who I was in contact with, I still am, was Professor Yaacob Ibrahim. I invited him a few years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, to be a guest lecturer in my class. And we are still in contact. And I asked him whether he wanted to do this Instagram live with me. And he was gracious enough, and he did. And, you know, he was also recently retired, and therefore, you know, he was a bit more liberated in expressing his views. So it was really a good episode. To date, that is really still one of my favorite episodes. And he was very candid about it. He said he talked about the weaknesses of his party during the elections and what they needed to do moving forward. So yeah, and when the first episode also, I remember, was about 400 live viewers at that point in time. But of course, now it's nowhere near 400 live viewers. It's about 50 live viewers. And you will have, I have 1,000 to 1,005 views per episode. And so it's reduced from the early days. But I think it's fine. If it, even if it's 500 views, right? Even if it's 200 views, it's 200 views more than I would have gotten otherwise, right? 200 is still better than zero versus if I didn't do this, right? And not just that. I hope that people who are really interested, researchers, people who write and people who report the news, I hope that they will do, they will take a look at it and then the message can get out. You know, so it's not just about the number of views. Yes, that matters for sure. That's an important metric. But I think it's also about who is doing the viewing.
Right, right. So you mentioned, I think earlier, you asked your students, you know, what are people using? And they suggested Instagram. Was there like a conscious effort to reach out to the youth?
It was a conscious effort to reach out to the youth, yes. So because Instagram is used by, I think, people... Even people a bit older than me, even if they may have Instagram, it's not their social media, it's not their weapon of choice, right? So their choice of weapon, sorry. So even for me, I was largely on Facebook. Even now, I would say it's 50-50, but I'm only on Instagram 50% of the time when I'm on social media is because of my tetarik sessions. Otherwise, I would be on Facebook far more. So I really thought that, okay, I needed to talk about politics to this demographic, I think, which sort of needs it the most. Not that less apathetic, they are more apathetic. It's not because of that, but because I think the silos are more pronounced for their generation than it was for older people, I think.
Right. Okay. All right. So you've been hosting this session for quite some time now. I think close to 2 years at this point. What have been some of your favorite discussions or chats that you've had on the series?
Yeah, so I mean, I would say that I've enjoyed more than 95% of the episodes, right? So maybe there were a few episodes where I felt that was a bit off. I will not mention them, right? Because they've honored me by coming on my show, so I don't want to say anything. But if you any person who frequently watches the shows would know which episodes I'm talking about. So there are hits and misses, you know. But there have been more than a few good episodes. I think the one with Yaakob was really good. The one with Leon Pereira, I think he's so underrated. With Dr. Intan, which I had recently as well. Constance Singham, who is amazing at 86 years old, still sharp, still humorous. But my favorite one would be a couple. One was the one I had with Sarah Bagarib, the one that became it was the only time that Tetarik with Walid made national news because the People's Association, and I guess not in a good way as well, the People's Association basically slammed Sarah, and part of their statement against Sarah included part of what she said during my episode with her. So they didn't attack me directly, but I was a sort of indirect. So that was a good one, I thought, because we discussed the issue of race in quite a nuanced way, like what she was feeling. And I left that, right? And Sarah is younger than me by maybe 5 or 6 years, right? So she's in between my age and basically the more woke crowd, right? So, and whenever she spoke, right, it was language that was familiar to me. Now, it may not be the language I speak, but the language of inclusion and diversity and all of that, it was very familiar to me because this is the language of younger people. So it was really sad to me that when I looked at it, all I saw was somebody straddling between this woke world and the older generation. That was what I saw, and it was language that was familiar to me. I don't know how someone looked at that and just, oh, this is somebody who's trying to be subversive, right? I think that was sad to me when that was the reaction by People's Association. But I guess that's also something that the government needs to look at, and government agencies need to understand younger people more and need to understand the woke generation more. You don't have to agree. You don't have to agree. But I don't think, I think you must try to understand them. But my ultimate favorite one was the episode I had with Mei Lin Fung on Chinese privilege. I really enjoyed that because I felt that, no, it's easy. It would be easy to just take a victory lap, you know, if you've won an argument. But I thought that discussion wasn't about winning an argument. That discussion was really about trying to make her understand where I was coming from. And I was, as much as possible, trying to understand where she came from as well. And for such a difficult topic, the comment section was a bit nasty towards her as well, because there were a lot of emotions, a lot of people were hurt. And even she reacted to that, to the comment section, right? But the thing about Instagram Live, the comment section are not captured later on when the videos are uploaded, right? But she actually reacted to it during the live. But I said as well, as in, we don't need to be nasty to her, you know, to disagree with her. You can make a difficult point without being a difficult person. So I thought the discussion was good, not just in terms of content, but also if I could own self, praise own self, right? Like set a blueprint for how we should disagree with people. So that's why I enjoyed that episode the most. So a special mention episode also be the one with Bertha, and that was a feisty one, I thought, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, and she said she did as well. And hopefully that's how we can show that this is how we disagree with people, right? So we mustn't pretend that we agree with everybody. Otherwise, there's nothing interesting to say. And first of all, we'll be lying. And second of all, which is sometimes, you know, the tendency of politicians because they don't want to offend anyone, right? Because they're going for votes. And also it's the tendency of people interviewing politicians, right? Because, you know, you guys do interviews also, right? It's not that easy to call out a person even when they but especially when it's in person, right? Or even online, right? But when you see that person, even when that person is just, you know what that person is saying is BS, right? It's not that easy to just call out that person, right? And yeah, so I'm still learning how to do it in a way that is palatable and still respectful to them, because ultimately, right, they are volunteering to come on my show. So I still need to show some gratitude to them. So that doesn't mean I need to just ask softball questions, right? But I still need to be polite. Yeah, so it's not always easy, which is why I thought the mail-in episode was one that I really loved.
Right. Yeah, I was there during the Bertha and mail-in episodes as well, watching live.
Okay, so, yeah. Okay, yeah.
So I saw, yeah, it did get feisty. I love that you invite, you know, people that who may not share exactly the same views as you, but after all, that makes for, you know, a more engaging.
And my philosophy is, if I wanted to speak to only people who agreed with me, right, I would only be speaking to myself. And even then, on some days, I wouldn't be speaking to myself, right? Because your views also evolve and sometimes they change depending on the situation as well. And they should, right? They should. So I have a huge problem with people who are always calling for others to be deplatformed, and people who are saying, oh, why are you endorsing that person by giving them that platform? So basically what they are saying, right? Oh, you should only speak to people who agree with us. That's what they are saying, right? And that really is a terrible way to think about how the world should be and how society should be. Not only a terrible way, because I think ultimately it results in a disharmonious society, but it's also an arrogant way, right? Without realizing that, because it comes from a good place, but actually it's quite an arrogant way, because you think you have the monopoly on truth and morality, right? Which I don't. I mean, I definitely come into a discussion thinking I'm right. Otherwise, why do I hold on to that view, right? But I always hope that when I enter an argument, I'm willing to be persuaded otherwise, right? On anything.
Right, yeah. No, there's something I very much agree with, you know. If not, people get stuck in their silos, I think, like you mentioned earlier. Okay, so maybe just move on to ask, what do you enjoy most, you know, about hosting these sessions, and what has been the most challenging or difficult process, so to speak?
Yeah, so I do enjoy arguments and debate. So that's just a weakness of mine. I can start an argument in an empty room, you know. My wife says I need to get checked for that. But okay, I mean, I accept that. But that's just a weakness of mine. But I do enjoy asking difficult questions and putting people on the spot. So that's my favorite part. And I especially enjoy doing so for politicians, right? If it's for a civil society activist or if it's an academic, right, it's different. But for politicians, I think in Singapore, politicians are not put on the spot enough. So, and I do this for government MPs and for former ministers and the opposition as well. So for Professor Yaakob, the question, one of the questions I asked him is, based on the election results when minorities were winning, is it still fair to say that Singapore is not ready for Chinese non-Chinese prime minister, right? So that's a stance that I am asking him to take, basically going, not going against, but it is something that his party has explicitly mentioned, or his party leaders have explicitly mentioned. And for Dr. Tan Cheng Bock, I started off the interview by saying, is it the PAP who has changed, or is it Dr. Tan who has changed, right? So it's not as if, because it's the opposition, I think, oh, we should go easy on them. No, I think all politicians should be put on the spot, right? So I do enjoy that. And I think the really good politicians, right, the best politicians wouldn't be afraid of such questions, right? They would be able to get out of such questions quite easily, right? I think they are able to navigate the answers pretty well. And I think both Prof. Yaakob and Dr. Tan are seasoned politicians. They really did well, in my opinion, in the interview. So that's the part I enjoy the most. The difficult part actually is not the interview. The interviews are something I enjoy. So the difficult part, one is just about time. It's quite a time-consuming one. Like yourself, you guys know, right? Before you interview, it's not a 20-minute interview, right? You have to go through what I've said or have written and so on. So same for myself as well. When I invite guests, like when I invited Anthea, right? Oh my God, Anthea has said and done so much, like, and she comments about so many different things, like, so I have to take a look at so many different interviews, and it's not possible to take a look at every single thing. So yeah, that is quite difficult, but that's a difficulty I expected and I have lived with, and that's fine. I think that's part of the job. The most difficult one is to actually get people on. Because people don't want to come on, the PAP especially, but even the Workers' Party sometimes is not that easy. Although I have gotten a few from both parties, but it's not that easy to get people on. I guess partly it's life, and partly because maybe they are thinking, oh, you know, for it's not worth it because for this amount of views, right? And then I may possibly say something during a live session and it's not a curated session, right? I might as well go to a more friendly outlet that can get more views and I will not be challenged as much, right? So I guess they calculate that it's not worth it, yeah.
It's a challenge for most folks, right? Because whereas it's true that you might go to a different platform, but very few platforms, and you appreciate this more than we do, where a long-form conversation has a lot more substantive content that you could mine. And it's not time-sensitive. It's like years down the road, you could come back to it and say, this was mentioned, right? And I really appreciated what you said about putting politicians' feet to the fire. And not just that, but like, being attuned to like the power dynamics, like realizing there are certain platforms and outlets that make it easier for particular folks, right? And so,
yeah. For sure, yeah. And this is no coincidence that these are the outlets that get the politicians on the lot, right? Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you talk about the long format, right? And I think that this is where you really test person's mettle, including a politician's, the long form format, right? Because there's a reason why, I mean, I don't know what your viewers think about Joe Rogan, for instance, right? But there's a reason why not many politicians can do a 3-hour interview with him, right? Because they'll be found out. They'll be found out. You cannot do your sound bites, right? You cannot do your 5-minute, that the cable news like, you know, and then you can do it into a reel or a TikTok. But the long form interviews, I think, are really useful. And I hope one day we create, you know, if there's enough of us, right? And we can create this culture where if they don't come on mine, they have to go on yours, or they have to go on some long form. They have to go on some long form format, right? And hopefully, right, all of us, right, all of us will adopt this, right? We hold politicians' feet to the fire. We don't ask them softball question like, oh, if you were not a politician, what would you be doing, right? I mean, who cares? Like, I don't care about your alternative dreams or whatever it is.
Right? Yeah. I agree, so, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully this culture, but we are in the nascent stage. This is really the beginning of political conversations in Singapore, public political conversations, right? It's now partly because technology has enabled it, partly because the political culture is at a glacial pace shifting, right? So I think hopefully in 5-10 years' time, we'll look back at this interview and say, oh, that was a different time, right?
And it's because we've been talking about politicians, but another group that we are probably familiar with and we probably identify with academics, right? And another group that you I think quite purposefully include folks from academia, right? Folks like Dr. Alvin Ong, you had I think Dr. Sharon George on as well.
Yes.
Because I think part of the problem, not with them, but with us in general, is that we have difficulty communicating our research and work in a more public audience, right? So I guess the question here is, what about that platform allows you to do things that you cannot do as an academic, right? That goes beyond the journal articles, the conference presentations. What about the platform allows you to do more for and in the context of academia?
Right. So I think that's an excellent question. And I think one thing is because academia has been dissociated from society disconnected from society for the longest time, which is a shame because I think academics have a public duty, right? The production of knowledge, right? It's not just producing, it's making it accessible. So I think academics are good at producing knowledge, but they are not good at making it accessible, right? Yeah. So, and I think podcasts and, Instagram Live, that is part of my public service. And honestly, because I don't get money from it. In fact, I'm spending money on it. Yep. I'm spending money on it. But it's fine. I see it as my public service, right? It's not going to be rewarded in my performance appraisal or anything. Yeah. But I basically have two audiences, right? One is when I write the books, I write for academic articles. That's for the academic audience. That's for my promotion and so on. That's me as an academic, right? The podcast, that's the second audience. The second audience, which I think is a more important audience in terms of shaping hearts and minds, right? And I think you cannot do that through a journal article. You can do that through social media posts. You can do that through a newspaper op-ed, but you cannot do that through a journal article or an academic book, right? Now, you can say, but what about Teo Yuen's book, right? Well, Teo Yuen's book is an exception. No other academic book sells 35,000 copies, right? There just isn't. That's not how it works in Singapore. You look at the bestsellers, right? The top 10 non-fiction bestsellers. Yeah. Every week, it will be some motivational book.
Correct, self-help, right? Yeah.
The subtle, self-help. Yeah. So those are the subtle art of not giving an F, whatever all that, all those kinds. So Yuen's book is really an exception, right? And that's incredible. She's an incredible academic, right? So I see that as the model, hopefully moving forward. Like, that is an academic book that is written in a palatable enough way to be understood by people, right? Often academics, right, we are so comfortable in our lingo, in our jargons, and we are writing almost as if we are proud to make it complicated and you can express complex ideas in a simple manner, right? So sometimes academic articles are too complicated or more complicated than it should be.
Yeah. So do you think, use the language of very corporate language, but if you had to do a performance review, so to speak, of your podcast, not podcast, your series, do you think it has made an impact in encouraging people to have more civic engagement, discussions, if not on Instagram or at least in general and social media?
So by the way, my Instagram, so the Teh Tarik session is also available on podcasts and YouTube. So afterwards, one of my friends, I pay her, but she's helping me. I underpay her, but she's helping me to upload it on YouTube and podcast. And I don't know. To be honest, I don't know the impact in that sense, right? But I do hope if there's one impact or one thing that I've done is I have normalized political discourse to some extent, right? And I have also normalized political discussions with opposition figures or with people who may not get mainstream attention as much, right? Professor Chiran George is a full professor, tenured professor in a top university, right? But he's not mainstream in Singapore, unfortunately, right? Professor Donald Low was on my podcast as well. Constance Singham had a book launch cancelled by the Arts House and she came on. So Ethos approached me and whether we can do that. So hopefully I have normalized political discourse and especially political discourse with non-mainstream figures, right? Now, that doesn't mean that I will get anybody. So I go as far as I can, But even then, for me also, there's sometimes some people, some topics where I say, I'm not sure whether I can get this. So sometimes, so there's still that. So there's still that element of fear, even on my part. So I have to be honest. But for another reason as well, sometimes I feel this topic, right, is it better discussed publicly at this point in time, or is it better discussed in a closed door session with certain individuals, right? So there's that consideration as well. But the first one exists as well, so I would not lie. So going back to your question, has it improved political discourse? Well, I hope so. The problem is, I don't think the series is as popular as I want it to be, or as I think it should be. So maybe it's still limited, but hopefully people who listen to it do benefit from it. So I have people DMing me almost weekly telling me that they have been affected by it, or they have thought about politics in a different way. But it's not like 1,000 DMs every week, or like it's 1 or 2 DMs per week, right? Sometimes I get the random email, and even just on Saturday, I was with my son and my nephew. We went to watch the game, Singapore and Malaysia. So I just went to the toilet, and then somebody approached my nephew and my son, said, "Oh, are you guys with Wallet? Tell him I'm a fan of Teh Tarik." But that's the only time that has ever happened to me. So only once, like a random person coming up. Yeah. But yeah, so hopefully it has impacted. But for sure, the impact is nowhere near as pronounced as I want it to be. Yeah, so I'm still thinking about how to expand my reach as well.
So on that, maybe just one last question. Yeah, so what plans do you have for the future? Are you thinking of, you know, expanding the series? Maybe you want to do like a regular talk show hosted on YouTube, something like that. We don't really have that in Singapore, you know, like in US, you have those like, you have Joe Rogan, you have like late night talk shows and this sort of thing. Maybe something similar?
Yeah, so I mean, I was discussing with my wife also, you know, like what happens if I don't get tenure, right? And and which hopefully will not happen, right? So what happens? And then this was one of the things that we were talking about as well, right? But then that would require so much more effort, and that requires a professional setup and all of that. But ultimately, right, there will still be one problem that remains, right? And that problem is getting guests on, right? And one of the things that I really, really pride myself in is I have a diversity of guests. I get people from the establishment, and so it's not just former PAP MPs, right? So Alami Musa, Ambassador Alami Musa, somebody from the establishment as well. So I get them, and I get people from the opposition, I get civil society. So I'm really proud of that. So if I even host that online, right, on YouTube, right, so there will be a problem of still getting people from the establishment on. And I wouldn't want my show to be viewed only as, oh, the opposition, I'm only getting the opposition on. Honestly, I invite whoever. I've invited almost every 4G minister, almost every single one. Some have replied, some didn't reply, and that's fine, right? But I invite as many people as possible. So the guest that you see on is not a function of my ideological biases. It's a function of whoever replies and is willing to come on, you know? So there will still be that problem. I would love to explore that. But, you know, now my setup, right? I buy a $10 bed holder for my phone. You know, I use some boomer mic, right? It's really very unprofessional, right? But if I'm going to do that, I really need something more professional. And I'm open to it. I'm open to it. I don't see myself doing it now, but I'm open to it, right? If, you know, if Straits Times call me, right, and say, oh, we want you to host this, right? I say, sign me up. I'm happy to do that, right? If they did that and then say, we are going to get the guests for you, right? And I say, okay, as long as there is a diversity of guests, even if it's 80% PAP and 20% opposition, right? That's fine. As long as you have those 20%, and I'm happy to do that, right? But then also you cannot tell me, oh, I cannot ask them this, I cannot ask them that. Then what's my value there, right? Then I'll be sorry. But anyway, why am I saying that? The Straits Times won't call me to do that. But I'm saying if they did, or anybody did, I'm willing to do that. Because I'm really not doing this based on any ideological agenda or partisan agenda, right? It's hard to believe, I know, for a lot of people, not for you guys, right? I'm preaching to the choir. I'm sure you guys do the same as well. But for a lot of people, right? I mean, you won't be surprised. You guys have met these folks as well, right? They'll ask you, what's your agenda? What's your agenda, right? They cannot think that betterment of society is an agenda for some people. Yeah, so I'm open to it. At the moment, no plans, but I'm open to it. But the immediate future, I hope to get a sitting ministers on. And I think if I get one, I think the floodgates will open. But I think there is, in fact, I approached one, not a minister, but an office holder. And this person told me that since no PAP person has come on before, this person doesn't want to come on. As in, no sitting office holder has come on before, so this person doesn't want to come on. If there's another person, so they don't want to be the first to be on. And I guess if you're an office holder also, your public appearances are more controlled. You have to ask permission from the party HQ. I don't know for sure. I'm just assuming that's how the process is, right? Because, for instance, if I go through, if I wanted to invite the WP person, it's not just that person. They have to go through the WP media team, right? So for the more established parties, it's more structured, right? For the less established ones, like, it's very ad hoc. Like, you DM them on Instagram and then they reply and then you get them on. Yeah.
I would say, hopefully, I mean, as a final kind of comment, and we'll make sure to link your Instagram page on the show notes. It's, if I were to think of it, it would be, as you said, one of the hopes that we hope will happen is like these kind of conversations are normalized so that the stakes are lowered, right? So like, you know, coming on a podcast, having conversation is really not that risky a thing, you know? And actually, I think it helps because the more it's normalized, the more practice, the more regular, the more ordinary it becomes. Then, you know, we can actually get down the brass tacks and actually talk about more substantive issues rather than trying to skirt around. Because this issue of the guesting, I think because we don't do the politics that much, but like, it's something that I've not thought about. But hopefully down the road, it'll be something that will happen. That we lower the stakes and increase the likelihood that folks will come on. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I think also sometimes they are worried for no reason, right? So when Yaakob came on, right, Professor Yaakob came on, I got so many, and I'm not joking, probably 100 DMs saying that, oh, I've never heard him before. I never knew he was this smart, this intelligent, this eloquent, right? It gave him an opportunity, right? Because in the media, sort of, you also see caricatures, right, of them, right? And you see them quoted. And sometimes, of course, they are quoted out of context, you know. So the long form conversations can help. It can expose them also, but it can help them also. Yeah. So I definitely echo your call as well. Hopefully the stakes are lowered when more of us do this. And you know, also I think, right, if we keep inviting everyone and only the opposition replies, right, then it doesn't look too good. Doesn't look too good, yeah, on those within the establishment as well. Yeah.
Hopefully that will happen. Thank you, Walid, for coming on, and yeah, thank you very much.
No problem. It was my pleasure.
Thank you.